All right, joining us now is Tony Arterman. It's always great to have Tony on, and he has Wise Wolf Gold, and he's kindly set up DavidKnight.gold. It'll take you to Wise Wolf, and you can get gold, silver, large or small transactions there. He's actually set up a buying group where you can get the purchasing power of being in a large group of over 1,000 people. I think it's the last time we talked, it was up to 1,200. That helps you in terms of your purchasing power, and you can buy in from low levels up to high levels and just set aside money on a monthly basis to start building your position. And something that is outside the U.S. dollar that is being so manipulated. DavidKnight.gold will take you to Tony Arterman's Wise Wolf Gold, and Tony is joining us now. Tony, there was an interesting article that happened on Saturday before this shooting saying gold was poised for a record high and bulls see even more of an upside. A lot of people have looked at this and said, well, is gold jumping up because of the shooting, or is it jumping up because of inflation that people anticipate is going to happen when the Federal Reserve lowers interest rates? What do you think is happening with gold? We hit an all-time high yesterday, I think. Wasn't it yesterday that we hit the all-time high?
Yes, we did. $2,480 per troy ounce for the yellow metal. And David, we're a long way away from when I started Wise Wolf and gold was about $1,200 an ounce. And I remember going on the radio and talking about, hey, they got this great reset coming. Is it, you know, all the currencies are going to be revalued. This is, we're seeing this clear. Can't you guys see this? And, you know, you talked about Wolfpack. Hey, if you've been a Wolfpack member for the last year or so, you're looking pretty good. Gold continues to break all expectations and outperform markets. And the reason is because the currencies are resetting. And when you want to ask, you know, why is gold going up? Is it interest rates? Is it inflation? Is it global uncertainty? All the things.
Yeah.
Yes.
The all the above.
Yes. I mean, it's multiple choice. That gold is a hedge against the chaos.
Yeah.
And again, gold is money and things are resetting. We can see that. I mean, the elites talk about their great reset, but the monetary systems around the world are resetting. And, you know, it's interesting, inflation data just came out recently, and it's starting to show that since 2020, for the first time, it's slowing a bit. Well, I mean, it's, you know, the massive amount of currency debasement that goes on and has gone on. You and I talk about that every week. But it is interesting that gold continues to rise no matter what the data is, no matter what Jerome Powell says, or that they're going to raise rates, lower rates. And, you know, you and I speculate they're going to lower rates closer to the election, which I happen to agree with.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really matter anymore because the macroeconomics, David, are what's driving the price of gold. You know, the demand for jewelry, that's something we talk about, central bank demand. That's about 1,000 tons a year, and it has been for the last 2 or 3 years. That's probably going to go up this year. But jewelry demand is over 2,000 tons, and most of that jewelry is going to places like Asia and going to India. The reason being is because those cultures, like we talked about the Chinese with the gold beans, those cultures instinctively know, because of their, you know, they haven't had the world's reserve currency like we have. We've been spoiled here in this country. Mm-hmm. We got some normalcy bias built into our system. They don't have, they've had currency problems for generations. And so they know what real money is. And that's what's happening around the world. You're seeing a massive demand that continues to go up, and the analysts all over the teleprompter readers and the mainstream media, they have no idea what they're watching.
Yeah. And you know, when you're talking about the financial systems resetting, it isn't because of factors that they've lost control or because of incompetence. You know, we're talking about this shooting thing. Is it incompetence? Is it malice? Well, this is malice, what is happening to it. And it's not just stupidity. It is a plan. And Biden told people in March of 2022, nobody paid any attention to it because that's when they had the kickoff of the Ukrainian thing. But, you know, they said, we need to completely redesign the financial system. And he gave that to the Department of Treasury and some other departments within the executive branch, some of these bureaucracies. That's their design, is to completely redesign the financial system. And part of that is getting rid of the fiat currency so they can move people to a CBDC. That was part of the CBDC orders. How are they going to enforce it? How are they going to market it to people? But let's have a complete redesign of the financial system. So it's intentional, this takedown that is happening there. And I don't, you know, Trump is positioning himself as not so much as anti-CBDC, but as pro-crypto. And a lot of people will imply that means that he's anti-CBDC. But he and J.D. Vance has got money in crypto, a lot of money in crypto. I don't know how much of his portfolio that is. It's a lot of money to me if you got a couple million dollars in crypto. But he's there as an ally. And when these people saw that, I think that's a big part of this technocrat alliance that he's made. Big money coming from Silicon Valley supporting J.D. Vance and, of course, Trump. But I don't know that he's necessarily going to be anti-CBDC. That doesn't necessarily follow if he's going to be pro-crypto. People like Elizabeth Warren that J.D. Vance has done bills with is so pro-CBDC that she's very, very anti-crypto, and they want to take crypto out of the way eventually, but they might allow these two things to run side by side. What is your take about that? We know that Jared Kushner was doing this in the Trump administration. What's your take on this? Can we trust Trump to do anything to that he says?
Well, let's not forget RFK Jr. You played earlier that conversation that was leaked. Let's not forget this is deja vu all over again, because I remember the 2016 election and Trump was, he had appointed RFK Jr. is going to be head of a special commission. We're going to investigate vaccine injuries for children because of supposedly what happened to Barron. And then that went away. So just because he's running on something, there's trickle down. Policy. And, the policy comes from the bankers. Who knew, David? You look at something. I love Bitcoin, by the way. And, again, I don't know. I can't say for a fact 100% that Bitcoin is what people say it is. I do know that it has been good to me. And I appreciate the decentralized system.
Yeah.
But back in January, I remember I was driving back to Texas from Missouri. I did a stream on my show and I just said, hey, random thought that occurred to me. They were about to launch the ETFs for Bitcoin. And, they've been working on it for 10 years. And I thought, okay, so what changed? And all of a sudden you have Larry Fink from BlackRock came out and started supporting Bitcoin as a store of value and it's legitimate. Now, these are the same people that, like Jamie Dimon, you mentioned earlier, like Warren Buffett, who said it was rat poison and it's only, fuels criminality. So, the policy really comes from places like BlackRock and it trickles down. BlackRock's put billions and billions into these ETFs. It was the biggest launch of any ETF in history. Okay. Mm-hmm. And now other exchanges around the world, Hong Kong and places like Australia, they're opening up ETFs for Bitcoin. So the demand is skyrocketing around the world. So I have questions on what their designs on Bitcoin are. Mm-hmm. And again, Larry Fink gives the policy. The Trump campaign picks it up. And by the way, they're way late. I mean, if this is like in the 11th yes. hour that you're getting on board. So no, I don't trust that at all. As a matter of fact, I'll be in Nashville next week for the Bitcoin conference on Thursday. Hopefully we can still do the show. Mm-hmm. But I was annoyed because Trump's going to speak there. it's going to be a MAGA rally instead of
that's right.
What I wanted to go there and network and hear some of the speakers who are actually really deep into the ecosystem of Bitcoin, because as I said, I support that. I don't support every cryptocurrency, but it is interesting. You got to stay very skeptical, these politicians, especially Trump. You look at his flip-flopping on just about every issue. I'm glad that he's pushing Bitcoin and, have your own, your keys and it'd be decentralized and we should bring mining here. I agree with all of that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, the conversation you had with Alex Jones before the election. Like, what do we do? Well, we applaud him when he does something good and we fight him and oppose him when he does something wrong. I'm kind of that mind, but I do not trust it. And, you mentioned the 666 Fifth Avenue, Jared Kushner. That's pushing that was his actual property address.
Yeah, exactly.
pushing the CBDC. The banksters, the people that actually rule this country, the financial elite, they want a CBDC. Okay, and this just filters down into our politics. It's why you're talking about why are the glaring issues like what happened to us in 2020, what happened to us in 2021? Look at all the data. Look at what's happened to people since the Operation Warp Speed. All these things that were just this massive criminality. We're not talking about that. Well, there's a reason we're not talking about that. So you're really only allowed to talk about only the issues that come up are the approved issues. And so somehow we've got into this place where crypto is out front. I'm very skeptical of it. I still support a great deal of the crypto space. But I would think that just because Trump is talking about Bitcoin, that he's not opposed to the CBDC.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, it doesn't necessarily follow. And as I was saying, you know, J.D. Vance, he's got a pretty big stake in it that most people would think was big. But there's another J.D. that's been rumored to be a part of the Trump administration, and that's Jamie Dimon or Demon. I guess we could say that, you know, if Trump wins, the Treasury Department will become demon possessed. But this is a guy who, again, look at all the stuff that he's said about crypto. He's been as critical of crypto in the past as J.D. Vance has been of Trump. And when you look at these people, Demon has been on both sides of the crypto thing. J.D. Vance has been on both sides of Trump and a lot of other issues. And Trump is on both sides of every issue. I mean, nothing any of these guys say is for real there. But I think it's very concerning, the discussion about what a Trump cabinet would be. They say that he's going to leave Powell in place and put Jamie Dimon in charge of the Treasury Department. That's insane.
Well, wasn't it George W. Bush after Hurricane Katrina? Was it Michael Brown? He's like, you're doing a great job, Brownie. You know, after Hurricane Katrina's head of FEMA.
Yes,
that's pretty much what Powell is now. You've presided over the total debasement of the U.S. dollar. 80%, and we go this number all the time, 80% of all the dollars ever created were created in the last 48 months.
Mm-hmm.
That's fact. So we have this massive currency debasement, you know, and again, Powell has raised rates faster than any time in history, surpassing Paul Volcker. Now, we don't see the same interest rates in the teens, but they've got a real problem. And matter of fact, you know, the problem's not only the amount of currency that they've created, but it's the loss of money velocity around the world. You know, these countries are dumping the dollar at a rapid rate. BRICS, you know, I don't think BRICS is going to create its own currency. But what these countries are doing is they're unifying cross-border payments and getting out of the dollar system. We just lost the petrodollar. Mm-hmm. That was not headline news, David. It should have been. That's earth-shattering economically. 50 years of U.S. dollar policy in the petrodollar with the Saudis, and they just abandoned it. And we did nothing. So you mentioned, you know, what? How do you set the stage for a CBDC? Because let's not stop talking about that. Just because Trump's in ahead in the polls and all this stuff, which is weird in and of itself. but I mean, well, I'm going to talk about that on my show here coming up in the next hour. I just want to really get back to the fact that when we look at what needs to happen for them to usher in the CBDC, all those things are still happening. Mm-hmm. And they're going to need to collapse the current system. What is Build Back Better? Well, in order to build something back better, you have to destroy it first. And that is the whole concept, right? Order ab chao, right? The Hegelian dialectic. You just hang something out here, in the extreme, and then we settle on something in the middle. And that's what they're doing. They're going to continue to do all the things, like losing the world's reserve currency status, losing the petrodollar. The inflation that is of record inflation. Look at the people that are posting on social media how much groceries cost now.
Oh yeah,
I mean just the ticket price. The average person who has the same wages, the same people that were, you know, we were called non-essential. All those businesses that they destroyed. Again, not talking about those things, but we go into a new spectrum of prices outpacing all earnings. And then they're going to bring in the central bank digital currency because there's going to be a problem with the current. They'll blame it on something else.
Yeah.
But the calls are coming from inside the house. This is a planned, controlled demolition of the United States currency system. And you look, what is it? Bernstein, who works for Biden, his lead economic advisor, who on 60 Minutes didn't really actually know, you know, how currency was created. And, like, you know, but he advocated, and we've talked about this before, he's advocated the United States should lose the king dollar status, which is insane. Mm-hmm. You know, again,
what they're working at.
Average American.
Yeah, they've deliberately engineered that to reset our financial system and to get rid of the dollar as the top of the financial system. And, you know, when David Stockman is looking at this, he said, you know, they're claiming that they've got inflation under control. because it went down by 0.1%. He said they're saying that it's okay now, instead of having their goal of 2% annual inflation, to have 4% annual inflation. As he pointed out, you know, according to the rule of 72, you take the interest rate and you divide it into 72 and you find out how many years it goes before it doubles. He said, so it's going to double in 18 years. Actually, you could say it's going to lose half of its purchasing power in 18 years. And if they go to the 2%, that means that they, their goal, their target was for the dollar to lose half of its purchasing price over 36 years. You know, what kind of a retirement plan is that when you got your assets denominated in dollars that they have decided that they're going to cause half of its value to go away over 36 years, or maybe half of its value is going to go away in just 18 years?
I remember those poor people in Iraq when I went to the bank and they were running out with boxes of Iraqi dinar with Saddam Hussein's picture on it, and they're not usable. Mm-hmm. You know, paper currencies, like the philosopher Voltaire said, all paper currency returns to its original state and value, which is zero. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we live in inside a real lifetime experiment. Since 1971, Richard Nixon takes us off the gold standard, and every country followed suit. It became a free floating fiat currency to follow the king dollar. And the average lifespan of a fiat currency is 26 years. So we've doubled it. Mm-hmm. So what's next? You know, you talk about the value of it's how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. Mm-hmm. Or something like that. We give psychological value to the dollar. It is backed by nothing. And that system around the world, because of the debt, and the debt's another issue of what's driving the metals prices that the mainstream media doesn't talk about. And, you know, we've mentioned it here, but mm-hmm. the staggering amount, the quadrillions, the unfunded liabilities, not just in the United States. I don't know if you knew this, David, but the debt to GDP ratio of France is 333%. Think about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Think about that. And, I mean, Italy, I think, is 250%.
Wow.
So, I mean, the West in general, because since 1971, it's staggering amounts of debt. Consumer debt in the United States. I mean, even, you know, Paul Volcker, who was head of the Fed in the 1970s, he was interviewed by Congress. He said, they asked him, what is your issue? You know, what do you see the biggest issues of what's changed in the U.S. economy? And, you know, is it strong? He's like, well, actually, it's we went from a production nation to a consumption nation, and the amount of debt that is racking up, it changes the nature. The very nature of our economy has changed. Wealth is producing things. When you become a net importer over net exporter, that's where your wealth goes. The trade deficits, like, if there's a deficit, if you're racking up almost, and we've had, you know, trillion-dollar trade deficits, that money is transferred somewhere. That wealth is transferred. In our lifetime, it's transferred into places like China. Mm-hmm. Now, the issue with that, too, is that what we're watching as well is this massive move of gold out of the West and going eastward. Now, if you study history and where the gold goes, it's the golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rules. I didn't make that up. That's just history. Yeah. You know, if you look, and I read a lot of history on gold. There's some fascinating things that go into that history. You know, and you hear people that are Bitcoin maximalists say stuff like, oh, well, Bitcoin's going to demonetize gold. No, it's not. Bitcoin's great, but there's going to be a need for the precious metals pricing system as monetary metals, as industrial metals. It's going to be part of our story. I read a little bit of the Bible every morning, just a couple of pages, just to keep, you know, my mindset right there and learn. Mm-hmm. And almost every day I'm running into references to gold and silver. It's part of our story.
Yeah.
And it's going to continue to be a part of that story. You know, it's funny. I'll throw this out there. A lot of people, you know, you kind of throw gold around and say, well, you know, over time, over history, how much we've mined about 151,000 tons up into the 21st century, about 151,000 tons that ever was mined. As a matter of fact, there's more steel poured in 1 hour in this world than all the gold that's ever been mined throughout history.
Wow. That's
but what's
amazing.
Interesting. Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. But what's funny about all of that is if they did a lot, they've done a lot of searching and looking at records. It appears that only about 10% of all of that gold was lost. Hmm. It's still around. It's still part. It's still in our reserves. It's still part of our economic ecosystem, it's very hard to obtain. Now juxtapose that to the fiat currency system, which is just absolutely unlimited, ubiquitous, and every time they have a problem, let's stop acting like these people are geniuses. They just have a printing press. It's really, I mean, how much, you could talk about Trump and the casinos. It's kind of like, well, you know, the Fed lost close to $1 trillion. And we've talked about that, $800, $900 billion in losses. It's kind of hard to imagine. You lost money when you make the money, but they end up having to do that. But, you know, it's just like anything else, David. The elites play by different rules, you know, and this socialism for the rich and free enterprise for the poor. And for the middle class and for the rest of us. And we don't have a printing press. So, you know, we need to stop acting like these people are geniuses and they cannot defy the laws of nature, physics. They can't defy what has been set in motion. And literally you have a trillions and trillions in the system devaluing the currency. And then you have all these emerging nations that are resetting the commodities market. We're asleep at the wheel here in the West. And I think in large part on purpose, that's what when the shock hits the average person, they won't know. And it's Buckminster Fuller said, people cannot get out of the way of what they don't see coming.
That's right. And I think all of this stuff is, I've said it many times, a Looney Tunes economics, where, you know, when the characters on Wile E. Coyote goes off the edge of the cliff, he can run for a while until he realizes that he can't. You know, and then he gets straight down like a rock. And I think that's really what happens with the currencies and with the economy. You know, they can create this illusion and that momentum can carry people for a while until they realize, wait a minute, there's nothing underneath this. And then you just drop like a rock. I think that's where we are. This year alone, gold has soared nearly 20%. But that's not really the way to look at it. As you point out many times, what that is saying is that this year alone, the dollar has lost 20% of its value.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and it's not always that, but that's the big story. That's the big takeaway is that you're not really seeing all-time highs of gold. And I don't think we're anywhere near proper evaluation based on the debasement. You know, we've all known what happened since 2020. And, you know, I remember it broke its all-time high. I was hosting your show 4 years ago and in August. And it broke its all time. That's the first time it really surpassed into the low 2000s. And for a while it stayed under 2000 and, you know, 1600 for a while, in 2022, but this is a resetting of things. And we've seen the gold demand spike. We saw what happened after the sanctions on Russia, after the invasion of Ukraine and these countries just moving away. There's a shift globally, David, of these central banks buying gold at a record clip. And the United States and the Federal Reserve are truly hamstrung because they cannot get in on that. And I think what you're really watching too is the accumulation before the reset. It's the accumulation before there's some sort of international system, you know, based on gold for cross-border payments. And it could be starting with the BRICS nations, but they're going to use gold. So the dollar is being supplanted by gold. After all these years, they're just resetting it. The countries know it. The United States, though, cannot do that. They cannot go and start buying gold because it has an inverse reaction to and consequence for the dollar itself. When they start buying gold, if they become a net buyer, then the price of gold goes up, which hurts the dollar. And that's what, you know, this is something that's been happening since the 1980s and 90s. They got really good at manipulating the price and keeping it suppressed and putting people in the markets. But those days are long gone.
You know, it's kind of interesting when we look at inflation. Jeffrey Tucker's got a piece. He talks about Weimar Republic and the Weimar inflation revisited. And the thing that I thought was interesting about it, which I hadn't really thought about, that kind of rhymes with the times that we're in. He said the trigger for the catastrophic inflation that happened in the Weimar Republic was reparations, war reparations. And I thought, you know, when we talk about how they're deliberately trying to subvert the dollar, how they want to have a completely different financial system, how they don't want the dollar to be king. They don't want it to be the reserve status. And these are Americans. This isn't just the Russians that want it. You know, the Russians, interestingly enough, our government is on the same page with the Russians who don't want the, neither our government nor the Russians want the dollar to be preeminent anymore. But when you talk about reparations, maybe that's one of the reasons why they're talking so much about reparations, slavery reparations or whatever. Just another trigger to blow this whole thing up. What do you think?
Well, it was interesting. You talk about reparations. I was reading an article that was about the Weimar Republic, what happened after World War One at the Treaty of Versailles, you know, that Carthaginian peace that was placed on Germany. And of course, it sent them into hyperinflation. You know, they couldn't pay the war debts, the reparations they had to pay, you know, just massive amounts of debt. They were humiliated. And what happened in that vacuum? You know, there was created this space of power. Well, you get the rise of fascism. You get the rise of the Third Reich and the Nazi Party and Adolf Hitler. They filled that gap, you know, and that's the chaos that can ensue when you place pressure on economies like that, especially when, you know, you got something that's struggling. Like, we're all struggling. I don't care. The United States, the economy is not healthy. You know, the prices that are built into the food, as we've discussed, to energy, to housing, the whole generation of, you know, Gen Z doesn't even think they can buy a house.
Yeah,
they're probably right. Because what's happened is the inflation, and people don't see it. They talk about raising the minimum wage or giving $15 or $20 an hour to fast food workers. And yeah, that sounds great on paper. But what happens when it continues to lose value? Are you going to reset it again? You know, you know, if you look at what's $1.25 minimum wage in the 1960s, 1964, well, you know, that's five silver quarters. What is that, about $30 today? You know, so it's purchasing power, folks. It's not just the number on the currency. That's how you're measuring it. And it's like we denominate gold in dollars or Bitcoin in dollars. I think that, you know, 20 years from now, maybe even 10 years from now, it'll be less based off the dollar system and more just they're on their own. What are they worth? You know, in translatable into goods, into commodities. And it's interesting. A lot of the commodities have stayed the same. It's just the currencies that against them are dying, you know, because they're losing purchasing power. As we discussed many times, it's like, you know, a new suit, you know, or a, you know, the price of crude oil or the price of land, or you could buy about the same amount of that with an ounce of gold that you could, you know, 100 years ago that you can today. It's the same. It's about the same within the margin of error. The same thing. Now, silver's kind of in that same realm, and it's been more heavily manipulated, I think, than gold. But it's about the same. Commodities usually pace with that. So that's why you see a lot of these countries around the world. Saudi Arabia is one of them. China's another, where they're just going for resources, you know, mining operations and really digging into that. That is their mission right now, is to secure resources. We're asleep at the wheel.
Yeah. And when you look at what has happened recently with Saudi Arabia, I think it was, I think I talked about it with you, the fact that they put pressure on the U.S., the Biden administration, and all the G7 were going to confiscate all that those Russian funds that they had frozen. And the Saudi says, no, you're not going to do that. And they threatened to pull their money out of the bond market in Europe, just as they had in past years threatened to pull all of their bonds out of the U.S. if Obama was going to allow these investigations to go forward and pin 9/11 on them. And so one way or the other, because if that was to happen, they would be found liable in lawsuits, and they're going to lose it anyway. But they have that leverage. It's actually the petrodollar has actually been has actually turned into leverage for them against us. Right. And how long will it be before they do it just because it's in their best interest not to be holding a currency that is rapidly declining in value? At some point, they will pull their money out. And then that's going to have massive repercussions for America when they pull their money out of the bond markets. If that is such a big deal that everybody backs off and says, okay, we're not going to do the sanctions against Russia. We're not going to steal their money and other things like that. They have that kind of leverage over Europe. They have that kind of leverage over us. And when they realize that our currencies are not worth anything, they're still going to pull that stuff out, and it's going to be catastrophic when that happens.
Oh, absolutely. As Otto von Bismarck stated, there's no altruism between nations. The future won't be decided by votes and rhetoric. It'll be decided by blood and iron. And we're talking about the buildup of military power, hard power, soft power, the combination. Where are you going? Where's the energy? Is the energy here? Is the energy in the West? It should be. America will be the only nation in history, hopefully there's historians in the future, but we look back that it was artificially declined. We all know there's, a rise and fall of empires, but we've been artificially declined, and it's been accelerated since 1971. The year that Nixon took us off the gold standards, the year that the World Economic Forum was born. Imagine that, same year. And then you get all the subsequent timelines, the opening of China, the birth of the Trilateral Commission, the loss of trade surpluses in this country. Those things all go together. So yeah, absolutely, David. We're really watching. Then this is history. It's happening before us. I mean, this massive shift, the economic power shifting east, the gold shifting east, and of course the Saudis. They're going to go with the winner. They're not projecting global power, but they just became the extra S in BRICS, and It's about 24% of all the world's crude oil comes out of the Middle East. It's not, you would think it's more, as much as we're so, focused there, especially the neocons, we're always focused on the Middle East. But that's a huge, they still have huge leverage. The Saudis have huge leverage there. And I think, just the silence on what was done after the end of the petrodollar, the Chinese yuan, it's not necessarily that the Chinese yuan is going to become the world's reserve currency. It's just that the dollar won't be anymore. There'll be all kinds of currencies used, and that's going to have massive effects on the purchasing power of the dollar, and those dollars will come home. That's Triffin's dilemma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you're talking about an artificial takedown, boy, I tell you, when you look at the energy industry, that's where you really see it. We've got so much oil and even more coal. I've shown the magazine many times. 1979, you had Time and Newsweek saying, we're going to be out of oil, we're going to be out of gas by the mid-1980s. Well, they were ludicrously wrong. But even at that point in time, they said, but we got 666 years of coal there. So the first thing they got to get rid of is coal, because this is a controlled, engineered takedown. So you got more coal than anybody. Okay, we're going to say coal can't be used. And then they start shutting down the oil and the gas and the other things, because it is an artificial takedown. And if you can take down our energy, then you can make it so that we can't compete. That's even bigger than the slave wage leverage that China has over American manufacturing. They have their China prices, currency manipulation, but it's also piracy of intellectual property, and it is slave wages that they pay their workers. But now they've got another component, and that is this tremendous advantage and the cost of their energy, because they're allowed to use coal. They can have as many and as dirty a power plants as they want. So this is an artificial takedown. You're absolutely right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I remember being 9 years old, 1989, and my grandfather, Morris Arterburn, he had an eighth grade education. He was a Korean War vet. He drove a tractor at age six out in Whitesboro, Texas, picking cotton, and came from a poor family, but he built himself up, worked with my dad, and he built gas stations. And we were at his Texaco, and I remember I was going to school, so I was learning all about how we're this peak oil, we're running out of oil. There won't be any oil left.
Yeah.
Everything, the sky is falling. And it's what they teach, everything. I don't know if it was global cooling then, or if they switched to global warming. I think it was the greenhouse effect, all that stuff, right? It's a catastrophe, and there won't be any oil in the future. And I remember asking my grandfather, and I'll never forget the look on his face. I kind of retain that same look now when I'm looking at the headlines on energy. But I said, Pop, are we going to run out of oil? And he was filling up his tank at his own Texaco, and he looked at me and just laughed, and he goes, no, son, we're not going to run out of oil. And he said, where do you get that? Where did you learn that?
That's a CIA narrative. Peak oil came from the CIA, pushed by the mainstream media. They were pushing it left and everywhere. Even calling it fossil fuels, that in and of itself, I don't believe it's fossil fuels. But anyway,
fossil fuel. That's another thing, too. I remember there was a wildcatter guy that was, I mean, he was older, a little bit older than my dad. I remember he used to go to the cigar bar in North Texas, and he went all over the world and drilled. And that's what he did. He was an expert. I mean, he was kind of an adventurer, almost like Indiana Jones type figure, you know, but he was really interesting. And he said, hey, we're talking about Syria. This is 2012. And he goes, I'll tell you a little something that most people don't know. And he's talking about all the oil pipelines and what ran through Syria and all these connecting pipelines throughout the Middle East. He said, you know, there's owned by holding companies that are owned by the CIA. Like he was telling me, he's like, it's just kind of it's an open secret in our industry. The CIA controls those pipelines.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, look at what happened. You know, you got these CIA figures like George H.W. Bush. They set him up in the oil business. And then you got the guy, what's his name? Dewhurst. He's a lieutenant.
Dewhurst.
Yeah. Yeah. Lieutenant governor there in Texas. He paid more for his office than any other politician had paid to run for office. And he paid out of his pocket because after he retired from the CIA, they set him up in the oil business. Kind of interesting, isn't it? You know, Zapata Oil, that was George H.W. Bush. We were supposed to believe that he just came from nowhere and was appointed to be head of the CIA. But you had ships that were involved in the Bay of Pigs called Zapata and Barbara.
Right. Well, don't forget, who backed LBJ? You know, what did that lead to? It was Brown and Root.
Yeah.
You know, and the oil money out of Houston. I mean, you go back, and that's a fascinating history to learn about how they manipulated the 1948 election. We've never heard of Lyndon Johnson. Might not have heard of the Vietnam War in its totality the way we see it now if it had not been for Brown and Root and their backing of LBJ. Yeah, we've got so much in this country that's controlled by these big multinational corporations, and they are really hand in hand. That's why I'm always skeptical when somebody like Larry Fink comes out and backs Bitcoin. I wonder if I'm in the wrong pew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, Trump, as he's enjoying this big burst of popularity, gives an interview to Bloomberg, and he's the one who talked about leaving Powell in there to let him finish out his term through May of 2026. Trump is the one who said that he would consider Jamie Dimon. I think Dimon's a better way to pronounce it, to serve as Secretary of the Department of Treasury. That stuff is coming from Trump. For all the people who think that things are really going to change, the more they change, the more they stay the same, don't they? I mean, it truly is amazing.
Well, yeah, so I guess it's some original thinking. We just get tired of Goldman Sachs people. Is it an improvement to get Jamie Dimon? No originality at all. I mean, it's so funny. The media talks about Project 2025 like that's a real thing, like the Heritage Foundation somehow grew teeth. It's so weird. I mean, they build it. This is so artificial, all this stuff that's built into the narrative. But, you know, that's a red herring. And you just push this over here and say, look at what the crazy, they're going to do all this reform. Ladies and gentlemen, they are not.
No.
You know, it doesn't really matter who's elected. What matters is really where you are, which decisions you can make on a local level, state level, county level, municipality level, pushing back against the federal government overreach and, of course, the policies that are going to emanate from there. I mean, we are in for, I think, a wild ride, David, because who's going to inherit? You know, if Trump is reselected and he gets into the Oval Office again, the massive amount of damage that's been done, unprecedented damage and loss, a loss of standing in the world, loss of our production, loss of confidence. I mean, we're not the future. As I said, it's, whether it's psychological or not, all these commodities are moving eastward. That's where the power is. That's where the energy is.
That's right.
People know it. If you're staying ahead and looking into the economy and looking into global markets, nobody's talking about us. Not really. I mean, we're just a sideshow because we're not doing anything. And, you know, the companies aren't moving here. They talk about, I'm all about tariffs, but I don't understand these tariffs that they're talking about, especially when you got somebody like a free trader like Biden. Free trade Uber Alice guy. I mean, he wants, and he was for NAFTA and CAFTA and the TPP and all of that stuff, and called people that wanted tariffs isolationists, just like the rest of these clowns. Mm-hmm. And now they want to be very selective. I'm skeptical of all of it, David. And again, the future, unfortunately, whether it's Biden or Trump, the future doesn't look good for the economic health of the United States.
No, I agree. Yeah. And when you look at these so-called free trade agreements, as Ron Paul said, if you want a free trade agreement, you don't need some thousands of pages of stuff defining who the winners and losers are. That's not free trade at all. It is managed trade, and it's just different. They're still picking the winners and losers. You know, going back a couple of weeks now, there was a question because I'd been, and it was put up by For Love of the Road, a question for you, Tony, because I've been talking about the Supreme Court case where they said, well, even if you haven't taken your money out, we're still going to tax it as if you had taken your money out. And they said, well, yeah, I think we'll let the IRS do that. We'll let that rule from Trump stand. And so this question was, how would this type of approach affect precious metals and IRAs and things like that? Well, first of all, it's something that they would do gradually, because just like the income tax, they want to convince everybody that this is not for you. We're not going to tax you. Don't worry about it. We're going to raise the taxes on the rich guys who don't pay taxes because they got lawyers instead of accountants. They lobby Congress to get the kinds of tax deductions that they want so they don't have to pay taxes. They pay the politicians so they don't have to pay taxes. But, so the first thing is it would take a while for that to trickle out to people. But what are your thoughts about that?
Well, it's a wealth tax. I think they're doing this in the face of new technology and the crypto sphere in particular, because of the rise of commodities. You can call Bitcoin a commodity. I believe it's a store of value. It's a store of energy, perhaps. But when you get more and more of these cryptos that come onto market, especially if they're gold backed, the price of gold goes up. You don't have to cash out. That's your currency, right? Mm-hmm. So if your currency is Bitcoin, I can take my Bitcoin and I can go buy something. I mean, a lot of people will trade in it. Same thing with gold and silver. If you have something that is stored somewhere, in something virtual, or if you've got an actual gold and silver backed IRA, they're not doing it yet, mm-hmm. but just something you need to be aware of is like there will place a wealth tax on especially things that are related to currency. The good news about the IRAs and things, most of them are tax shelters from what I can understand. Not an expert. Don't take my advice on any kind of investments for that. I do the IRAs for 401ks and, rollovers, IRA rollovers. We take you out of paper, put you into physical. There's a lot of things. This came out in 1974. There's a lot of things built into those that protect you. So I don't know that they'll be able to do anything particularly in that sector. But when it comes to like holdings, a bank account, stocks, things like that, yes, you got to be very, very careful. And especially, when the rise of cryptos is, I think, is what's pushing that, where they're trying to anticipate you having a transferable monetary technology along with a rise in value. So you never see, if you have an off ramp like Bitcoin right now, if nobody took Bitcoin, well, you have to take your Bitcoin out, especially if you're like doing an ETF, you have to take your Bitcoin out, cash it out, turn it into fiat, and that goes through the traditional banking system.
Yeah.
But if I want to send David Knight, some Bitcoin, I can just get his wallet. It's done right now. There's no mm-hmm. bank there, mm-hmm. right? So that's what the anticipation. They see the rise of this technology, and it is moving forward. I mean, there's a mixed bag, and we have to be, I think, very cautious and skeptical and hold people accountable with the continue to have the decentralization part of the cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. But I think that's what this is about.
Yeah. You're talking about the off ramps and things like that. And there still is an off ramp there, but there still is visibility as well, if they can identify your wallet. And they're coming after crypto using the Securities and Exchange Commission. And so that's part of the fight. Should they get that away from the SEC, they've tried to, they've been bringing that in and having, know your customer rules through the banks and that type of stuff. But they treat it as a security still. And if you've got a wallet and you're able to transfer this stuff, and if they, depending on whether or not they can see what is going on with that wallet, but if you've got something that is physical like that, to me, the gold is going to be very desirable in a black market type of economy. And I think that's ultimately going to be what's going to have to happen, because I don't think we're going to be able to stop the central bank digital currency with political means. I think we're going to have to go around it. And I talked to Sheriff David Hathaway, who has worked in foreign countries, and he said, every other country that he's worked with in that he's worked in Central and South America, they always had a very vibrant black market economy. He said Americans don't think like that, but they'll catch on pretty quickly when everything else gets shut down, I think.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And history is our guide. It happens pretty quickly. People start to look around and try to find value. And I was reading that article on the Weimar Republic. I mean, they were using, they were trading all sorts of things in the face of hyperinflation. I mean, it came down to the, they were using pianos. And
that's like, even harder to transfer than gold is, heavier than gold is, isn't it?
I mean, there's anything that was any kind of, it was a hard asset or a value of something. I mean, it was, it's been crazy. If somebody was able to buy a hotel with one, you know, $20 American gold piece because of their price of their currency based off of, you know, juxtaposed to gold. So no, I think people would catch on very quickly. And that's what, you know, I'm glad, you know, your listeners are paying attention, and there's so much participation in Wolfpack, which I really appreciate. More people to join, the better deals I can get everyone. But that's something we're providing, just making sure, like, hey, if you want to, you know, again, if you've got $50, you want to start a Wolfpack, go to davidknight.gold. We start looking at metals that you could use. I don't just put, you know, one thing in there. We try to make it diversified, so you get the smaller pieces of silver. I even started finding gold, not gold, but we have gold grams, but we have silver gram bars, you know, just grams of silver, you know, especially as we've seen silver break $30 an ounce. These are neat things to have, and we're able to get a pretty good discount on those as opposed to the pricing on some of the majors. So yeah, go check us out over there. That's a way to, you know, this is something that I set up in my mind, you know, what I was doing for myself. You know, every Wolfpack invoice is like I would buy for me. You know, and then something that I put into to my own holdings, because you're absolutely right. Counterparty risk is, you know, being inside the system. Lack of counterparty risk is you holding your own coins, your own gold, your own silver. And we've talked about Bitcoin, but really focusing on the gold and silver in the physical world. And that's a recognizable money, has been money throughout history and will continue to be.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, I look at gold. It's somebody said it's wealth insurance instead of health insurance, and it's having it outside of this digital system, which I think has already got a lot of vulnerabilities in it. It's going to have more as quantum computing comes online, as cyber attacks become more and more. I think, you know, the physical thing is, for me personally, very, very appealing. Anything you want to tell people about what's happening at Wise Wolf Gold? In particular, or
well, just, you know, this is a crazy time. I give people some inside info. It has been slower on the gold purchases. It's been slower in general in a lot of ways. I think people are just kind of shocked at what's happening with the price of metals. So I understand it's a hard time for people to get involved in the market. But if you are interested, if you want to look at rolling over something, if you have in the paper markets, we make it very easy. You just go to davidknight.gold, and most likely you're going to be dealing directly with me. I call people, I give them my cell phone number. So if you've got needs, you want me to take care of your precious metals, you know, whether it's buying or selling, we'll take good care of you. We know it's a crazy market out there, but we definitely will try to save people money. Same, you know, I get so many calls of what happens to people calling these big 1-800 numbers you see on TV. Nothing wrong with them, but a lot of times, normal people are just not treated all that well.
That's right.
You know, yeah. they're going to assess how much you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't do that. I'm going to walk you through. I'm very passionate about it. This is my calling. And so if you've got something that you have any questions on precious metals, go to davidknight.gold, reach out to us, look at the Wolf Pack, as low as $50 a month. It just helps. It helps us. And the more people that join, the better. And 1776 is the promo code to get some free constitutional silver. And it also helps this magnificent show, which we're very proud to sponsor.
And we really do appreciate your support. It's been great, and it's been from the very beginning. And so we really do appreciate that, Tony. Thank you. And you've got a program that is coming up immediately following this one. Tell people where they can find it on Twitter and elsewhere.
You can go to Twitter. It's at Tony Arterburn. I'll be streaming live there and the America Unplugged channel on Rockfin. So that's the Arterburn radio transmission right at an hour. And we'll see what we can drum. We'll have some fun. It'll be a continuation of this conversation. So go join us over there.
Sounds great. Well, thank you very much again. We appreciate your support of this program. And a big part of the support of this program comes from Tony. So We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back, and we're going to talk a little bit about the CIA. So stay with us.
Listening to The David Knight Show.